center fielder and their left fielder both made diving catches that absolutely saved the game.
Judd Ward's catch.
Which one is he? The center fielder?
The left fielder. Second catch.
Yeah.
That saved two runs easily. That was going to be an inside the park homer.
Yeah. Yeah, you're probably right because it's down the line, so he's got no backup.
Yeah.
The one the center fielder made, the right fielder is going to be over and make the play, but you're going to have a run scored. And it was probably going to be a runner on second or third with one out. And that game's probably over. Even though I think that was the sixth, I believe, Auburn had nine outs left. But their bats were doing nothing.
You know, the toughest play for an outfielder is the line drive. You're taught to freeze on the line drive. But a line drive that deep when it comes off the bat of Langworthy, I just think it kind of handcuffed him.
Everyone's debating, does it get over? Or does it go off the wall?
I think it goes off the top of the wall.
I do, too. I don't think it was going to make it out.
I think it goes over. Those are short fences. I wish if it had been major league fences, there's no doubt in my mind that it would have gone
off. But it was kind of diving down at the angle. It was just such a flukish play to go off the glove. I mean, if you played that over again, I mean, how many times would it hit the glove and actually go off and go over?
Yeah. I mean, you know, everybody remembers the Canseco play where it hits off the top of his head and goes out. And initially, you know, it happened so quick, I couldn't tell that it hit his glove. I didn't know what it hit on him, but I could tell it hit something. And, I mean, you just feel awful for the guy because he's very close. I mean, think about that play now. Stealing a home run to keep a game alive for a trip to Omaha. I mean, that would have been one of the greatest plays in all of our baseball history. And yet, you know, the poor kid is remembered for the ball going off his glove and out. I don't know. I'm watching that replay.
It looks like it's dying down. I think it's going to hit right at the top of the wall.
Yeah, but if it hits the top of the wall.
Now, if I'm his father, I'm saying that thing's going over.
Yeah. If it's the top of the wall, though, he's easy to third, don't you think? I mean, he's got a triple, and what was there? No outs.
No outs.
So the game's over either way.
More than likely.
Probably so, unless you get Greenhill pitching his way out of it.
I mean, that was going to be one masterful escape if he got out of that deal.
But I don't watch enough college baseball. I wasn't really familiar, you know, with the field. I know at Florida State they have the big high chain link fence. And so when the ball initially hits his glove and goes over the fence, you see it hit more fencing or netting back there. I'm like, oh, is that still in play? But then you see it drop
behind
the wall.
That is a short wall, though, isn't it?
Yeah. Short wall.
That was a fun game to watch, though. I mean, it had a little bit of everything. Florida put on they stole home and put on an amazing trick play to steal home, basically.
You know, even back in the 80s, that must be a universal play that's been around forever because even back in the 80s at Thompson High School, Billy Woodham had us practicing.
I don't remember. I played baseball all my life and don't remember everybody a first and third situation with somebody falling like that.
Did y'all, I mean, those were. You had different scenarios where
usually you would try to guy going from first to second would try to take infielder out of play, like, you know, go towards outfield.
Yeah.
The tag away.
You always try to get in the rundown.
Yeah.
If you're the guy on first.
But I've never seen somebody fall like that.
You steal and you get to throw, you get in rundown, and then it's the break to the
but
play.
But you could tell the fall completely distracted the pitcher.
That's what it was.
I mean, he froze. He didn't really know what to do.
And it was an immediate break on the fall.
Yeah.
So you know, and Butch Thompson said it. Look, man, you got to be accountable for the guy at third. That's what you got to worry about in that scenario.
Yeah, but I mean, the fall, because now the pitcher's got to think, what do I do? Who do I throw it to? Do I just run over here and tag? Oh, my gosh, there's a runner on third. I mean, that's exactly the way that goes in his head, right?
You know, normally it's in a first and third situation you step off when you're going from the stretch and that. But the problem is it was just an immediate break. You don't have time to step off.
Well, you have to step off, or it's a balk.
But it's the immediate step off and straight to the plate.
Right.
But, I mean, it was executed perfectly.
Yeah.
That first and third usually is trying to get a balk out of you. And that's where you usually get that run home.
You know what was funny, though, was hearing Kevin O'Sullivan, the Florida coach, call it a gimmick. It's just some gimmick. You never hear a college football coach say that. That's what struck me.
Love the admission, though.
I know. It's just some gimmick. You know, we might run it twice a year, but it's just a real gimmicky play that gets us a run.
Well, they're number one. And, you know, they're the number one seed, and their backs are against the wall, and they're having to use, in his words, a gimmick play. To try to get over the hump to get the Omaha.
It's a great play.
He seemed almost embarrassed he had scored a run that way.
A little bit. And again, we don't talk a lot of college baseball. And I didn't realize this. I knew they were your defending champions. I knew that they were a fixture in Omaha. But this is almost Saban-like what Kevin O'Sullivan has been able to do in Gainesville.
Yeah, four straight trips, right?
I mean, seven College World Series trips in 11 seasons.
Yeah.
Coming out of the SEC, coming through all those super regionals you got to get to. And Florida is going back now. For Auburn, the season ends. And afterwards, Butch Thompson, who's in only his third year, and I know there are other schools who, like Mississippi State, who may show some interest or would at one point, and many of you Auburn fans have told us he's taken his name out of the running there. He seems very comfortable building his own program down at Auburn. They haven't been to Omaha since I went with them back in 1997. I wasn't a player, just covering them, all of the Birmingham media. I think that's the last time we all got to go to Omaha.
So you did make it sound like you were playing short.
Yeah, like I was catching.
Yeah.
Big news yesterday in boxing. Deontay Wilder from over in Tuscaloosa has agreed to fight Anthony Joshua, and it's not going to happen in the U.S. According to all the reports, it's going to happen over in the United Kingdom. He's fought once at Wembley and put 90,000 in, a couple of other fights at another soccer stadium over there that he's had 70,000 plus. So it's going to be a bigger show over there as far as crowd attendance, stadium-like, the way heavyweight fights used to look in the 70s when they would do the Thrilla and Manila and that kind of stuff. But apparently, LT, when they fight in Europe and anywhere but Vegas, the possibility of the money made on it drops considerably.
Yeah,
is that true?
Considerably, yeah. I mean, you're looking at maybe $20-25 more million dollars if this fight was to take place in Las Vegas. Anthony Joshua, much more comfortable fighting in the UK. I think the atmosphere will be awesome, though, for Deontay Wilder.
And that's where I wanted it to be fought. Deontay's camp tried to get it in Vegas, but he is going to take this, and not taking a percentage of the gate or the TV or anything. He's taking a flat fee, and that's a rarity, too, in this situation, right?
Well, and I mean, you look at what Wilder's going to make, though, and this is a guy that really has ascended over his last three or four fights. You know, he just broke the million-dollar barrier a year and a half, 2 years ago. And on this fight, he's going to be guaranteed between $12.5 and $15 million.
And some reports are saying, since he didn't take a percentage, it may even be a little more than $15 million.
Could be more. And in this contract, and look, obviously this deal is not signed, but if the terms are accepted, there will be a rematch clause that will come back overseas and more than likely be fought in Las Vegas.
But the two biggest fights of probably the last decade, I mean, I would guess you can correct. You guys follow boxing closer than I do.
Well, it's going to be two Mayweather fights.
I know. And one of them didn't even involve an actual boxer.
Right.
So, but both of those
fights. It was Pacquiao Mayweather, right. And then obviously what we saw this past year.
McGregor and Mayweather.
McGregor, yeah.
Both of those fights, though, took forever to get done because it looked like neither side wanted anything to do with it. Except for McGregor obviously wanted to fight Mayweather, but he was looking for the publicity, right? But it looked like Pacquiao and Mayweather, neither side really wanted to ever fight that fight. And it finally got done because each of them had an objection, you know, one thing or another. And then Mayweather, it never looked like he really wanted to fight McGregor, but it finally got done. This is why I credit this one, because it would be easy for Wilder, if he didn't want to fight the fight, to throw up objection after objection after objection. And what he has said is, all right, we'll play by your rules.
But if you're even Wilder, though, I mean, for $12.5, $15 million, your biggest problem, there were three hurdles. First, for venue to be decided upon. Second, we've got to decide where they're actually going to show this boxing match. And then, you know, the number third thing right now is Alex Povetkin. I mean, this is a guy that actually, he's lined up right now to fight Anthony Joshua, and that's still a possibility before the Wilder fight. And if Povetkin comes in and he beats Joshua,
then this fight means
kills
very little.
Fight. Yeah. Kills it.
Yeah, you're absolutely. I don't even know if they do they.
I don't think they would fight.
Yeah. I mean, there's no reason for Wilder to fight it at that point. Why would he fight it?
Does Joshua have to fight that other fight?
I don't think he has to. I think it's scheduled right now.
To me, you got to break that fight off.
Yeah, I think they will break it off.
Yeah, and then fight this one. Problem is, it's going to be in the middle of football season. And I say that as a sports fan that usually gets wrapped up in football. I will watch it because it's Deontay Wilder. I don't know about everyone else. How do you think everyone else will view this?
I don't know,
because it's Deontay Wilder.
You know, the original date was September 15th, but Canelo Alvarez and Triple G, their scheduled rematch is the 15th. I don't know if that fight's going to go down or not, but if it does go down, they're going to have to move this to October or November. Regardless, it's going to be on a Saturday night in college football season. That's when we got some of these Mayweather fights, and I still found time to watch a two-hour fight and had other TVs on and things after watching a full day of college football. I just don't know if the majority of our listeners are going to be willing to go pay-per-view on this fight, if, in fact, it is a pay-per-view when it goes up against college football.
Jocks Roundtable.
Is that the everybody-gets-a-trophy era? Why is the LeBron era and why do we tag LeBron with that one.
I know. LeBron carries people by himself. To me, it should be more of the Warriors era.
Yeah. Well, I do think that the one negative on LeBron, and we brought this up yesterday, wearing the cast, wearing the brace to the post game after getting swept by Golden State.
Steve Kerr even said, I knew something was wrong with him yesterday. He was watching. He says, I knew something
was wrong. He's doing
push-ups.
He's high-fiving. Yeah, I mean, he's
all these
the
videos come out of things he's doing with that hand.
Look, LeBron is, I mean, you can make the argument the greatest on a way, but the one thing that people would say Michael Jordan always had over LeBron was just the mental toughness.
I don't know why LeBron, though, gets tagged, because what everybody is saying is this is the everybody gets a trophy. We're going to go hug a kid after we strike him out. Everybody gets a trophy. Why is that LeBron? I mean, LeBron,
he pouts and walks off the court, right?
so
LeBron's lost more trophies than he's won. He's the opposite of the everybody gets a trophy.
Just so I'm clear, you think Jordan better than LeBron, or at least tougher than LeBron? Where are you on Jordan LeBron?
I think LeBron is as good as Jordan, but I think if we're going mental toughness, obviously, Jordan and Kobe were mentally tougher than LeBron, but I think LeBron had more talent, or as much talent. Really close on the talent, but I think the intangible, what might take Michael Jordan a little bit further, was obviously the mental toughness.
Really close on Bulls and Warriors as well. Rockstar cut number 4, Steve Kerr, yesterday, as they get ready to have, by the way, parades today happening both in the nation's capital, as the Washington Capitals finally will be able to end this party that they've been celebrating with the Stanley Cup with their parade this morning. They need it for their livers at this point.
I'm not sure Ovechkin could survive another week. If you've watched the video,
we've seen people celebrate and party. This guy's another level right now.
My word. I know the Russians are, you know.
Now, the Red Wings were doing it, too. You remember we had a couple. Yeah. I forgot the Red Wings that actually had the was Fedorov one of the guys that was in the limo?
I think so. I mean, I know Ovechkin. Those Russians, I think they're constituted a little differently on the inside.
Ovechkin's doubtful for game one right now next year, for the hangover.
He's getting after it.
He looks like a walking hangover. Meanwhile, later in still morning Pacific time, but later in the day because it's out on the West Coast, Golden State will have their parade today. So both the NHL and NBA parades are happening on different coasts today. Steve Kerr, at a news conference yesterday, was asked, hey, you played with the Chicago Bulls that won championships. You're coaching this Warriors team. Who was better?
I was only part of the last three, but winning 3 out of 4 is not easy. And six out of 8 for Michael and Scotty and the core of that team was just incredible. But we're still young enough where we can still compete, and we're going to keep going for it. And at the end, you guys can all rank where we end.
He wants no part of that question.
Because you disrespect, you disrespect your teammates if you say it's this Warriors team, and you disrespect your team, which you can't do if you said it's that team.
Yeah, it's only a story if he answers it.
Right. But he's probably right. I mean, it's hard to separate the two right now where they are. If they roll off 6 and 8 years, then you probably can say, hey, they're equals or one is better. But
I just wonder, Dunaway, because I was asked this morning, I was talking to our friend Clay Travis, and he's like, what dynasty lasts longer, what Nick Saban's got at Alabama or what you've got with Golden State? And I went Alabama. I don't know which direction you guys would go, because when you start to look at this, Clay Thompson's under contract for one more year. Durant could actually opt out this year. Draymond's got 2 more years. You've got a tricky back in Steve Kerr. There's just no way you can keep this thing together for 3 or 4 more years.
Yeah, but how important is Kerr, you think?
I mean, Luke Walton was undefeated, wasn't he?
No, I get that, but I'm just saying the whole nucleus of this thing. You're right. I mean, Kerr is the most expendable guy, but is there a chance you really are able to keep Draymond, Clay Thompson, Steph Curry, and Kevin Durant together for another 4 years?
Well, remember I brought up Durant could opt out very early in the process and thought about how fun it could be. Speaking of Unbound.
Yeah, I know. That was awkward timing for that. I apologize.
No,
I don't schedule them.
Speaking of Unbound, to just play the other side of the coin for everyone else, Rockstar, your Detroit Lions photographer yesterday got a little bit more of LeGarrette Blount.
I heard about this.
He wanted.
No, I didn't. That's one of those I didn't go Google. I might Google Upton. I'm not going to Google LeGarrette.
Get a hashtag going.
LeGarrette decided he did not want to put on everything to get his picture taken and left off some of his undergarments. And
oh man,
those tight fitting pants showed up. In the team
justified
picture.
Didn't blush, did he?
I haven't seen the photos.
We're talking blunt force trauma here. Yes, LeGarrette Blount.
I mean, I've seen the photos, but I am told the ones they took of Matthew Stafford, he's way more cut up than you would think Matthew Stafford is. Have you seen these?
So you're pivoting off of LeGarrette Blunt.
I thought we were done with the jokes.
Stafford has actually gone to a dietitian. He's tried to drop the BMI. So he's been working hard on it. He's just got one of those fat faces.
He does now. But Dunaway and I saw him on the sidelines at the Bama-Georgia game.
Yes.
And in person, I'd seen Matt Stafford play in person, but, you know, in that, he's in pads and all that. But in person, Lance, he doesn't look near as big as you think he would. Like, I was a little surprised how small Matt Stafford was. I don't know what they list him as. 6'2"?
I would say that Stafford's 6'2", 6'3", 225, 230.
Yeah, he looked a lot smaller than that in person.
Felt like 6'1 to me.
Yeah, and didn't look anywhere near 230, really.
Now, when they do that, cleats on, cleats off. That's cleats off.
Cleats
right?
off, yeah. Supposed
yeah,
to
I
be.
Mean, it's
most
the,
media guys seem to be cleats on.
I think once you get in the NFL, don't they always go by at least height wise, your combine weight
they
or
should.
Your combine or Senior Bowl height?
They should.
I
yes.
mean, the weight's going to fluctuate, yeah. obviously.
It works. So, big deal, not a big deal.
I don't think it's a big deal. I mean, Julio's probably going to forfeit $84,000, which is chump change compared to what he's making. I think the big problem for Julio, look, when you sign these extensions, and it was a good deal in 2015 when he signed it. But now the problem is everybody catches up with you. And now seven other wide receivers are making more money than Julio Jones. We know Julio Jones is a top three or four wide receiver in this league. So guys like Jarvis Landry, who are making as much money as Julio Jones, it doesn't make sense on the surface. But this is where we are in contracts.
Let me play the flip side. When I saw this morning, this is what occurred to me. And I think I can counter any of your arguments, but I'll see. Sell me on a better place than this current Atlanta setup for Julio Jones.
There is none.
I don't think there is.
Yeah, look, he doesn't want to be anywhere, Brown. I think he wants to be in Atlanta.
I think
he's
so
got
too.
A perfect setup. He just wants to be compensated.
I agree.
In line with other great receivers in the NFL. Mm-hmm. Antonio Brown's making $17 million. That's $3 million more per year than Julio Jones is making.
But Atlanta knows what I just said, too. So why do I give him everything up front? They know he's not going to. Julio Jones could be a lot of things. He's not stupid. He's not going to walk away from this situation. You cannot put him in a better situation than he is in the NFL right now. Even Tom Brady in New England, I don't know that it's a better situation.
Look, and I think there's mutual respect. Thomas Dimitroff, I think Julio Jones knows he's got an elite quarterback in Matt Ryan. He's got one of the best general managers out there. So I do tend to agree with you.
Plays indoors on a fast track. I mean, it's everything you could want.
I know, but when you're a good organization, like you saw the Warriors, we played the sound for you last hour. Bob Myers, the general manager for the Warriors, in basketball, said, hey, Kevin Durant, we're about to renegotiate a contract. Is it going to be a tough negotiation? We're going to give him whatever he wants. Julio Jones is your best player. Matt Ryan, who just signed a $30 million contract, would probably tell you, I'll give you some of mine to make Julio Jones happy. That's what you do when you're a good organization. That's how you keep it going. The Steelers, they worked, you heard Ian say it, they worked it out with Antonio Brown to make sure he was getting more money.
But Le'Veon Bell's one of their best players, and he's constantly a threat to sit out.
Different position.
Would you guys work different things off the books if you were a guy like Julio Jones?
What do you mean?
Like if you had a relationship with Arthur Blank, would you go to him and say, hey, can I use your jet 20 times a year?
Discounts at Home Depot?
Give me 0.002% of all beer sales in Mercedes for the 8 home games.
I would like to think if I'm Julio Jones, I can get Arthur Blank's jet anytime I want it without even asking, without even having it in a contract. Wouldn't you think?
Probably so.
I mean, I'm sure
Matt Ryan
can.
I'm sure Matt Ryan and Julio probably have access to that.
But to ultimately answer your question, Dunaway, I don't think this is a big deal at all.
Based on the Falcons right now, Julio Jones
Matt Ryan. Julio's probably second. Actually, Arthur Blank might be second. Julio's probably third.
You think Arthur Blank's the face of
Arthur
I mean, I know
Blank.
He owns it, but you think he's the face of the Falcons?
Dan Quinn's going to be way down there.
Oh, yeah, Dan Quinn. I mean, he could walk downtown Birmingham. Nobody knows who he is. Arthur Blank's just a unique-looking guy. That's why I say
is.
That. I think people would I think if we do facial recognition.
Yeah, Arthur Blank's like a 1920s silent actor.
He really is.
Or a 1948 mortician.
You could see
too.
That.
Yeah, I could see that with Arthur Blank.
Looks like a smoker.
I mean, if you played him in a mafia film, he could be in the mafia, couldn't he?
He wouldn't be a trigger man though.
No. He's the boss.
28 after, so we'll see when Julio gets there. It looks like Odell Beckham Jr., who's also trying to get a deal worked out with the Giants.
Bigger deal there.
Is gonna show up.
Clarification. Sure. I need some clarification on the stake bets. You guys make stake bets. I'm curious, are these just, like, I think you owe somebody 1,000 stakes. Is this just a friendly, we're never going to pay this, or is the stake bet a real stake bet?
No, vampire hunters.
No, we do pay them off. In fact, LT's taking me to pay one off this week. For a long time, I trailed for years and years and lost a lot of stakes.
Uh-huh. He's had a good year. Okay.
But I've had a really good year. We pay them off. Here's the way the rule works. If you're two down, you work out next convenient time that we can all go to eat. And right now I'm four up. So we're going to go eat this week if our schedule works out. We couldn't eat that much red meat and still live. That's how many steak bets we make. But we do keep a running total. And occasionally I'll actually send out the whole list of running totals. But we have fun ones out there still, like what happens first, Kardashian and Kanye break up, get divorced, or Tennessee win 10 games. We have things like that. But we do pay them off, usually at our sponsor, Fleming's.
I assume if you want me to be a regular listener, you want me to be a well-informed intelligent.
Oh, yes.
No.
Absolutely.
In fact, I've always thought we should have a place on the website with all the inside running jokes and things like that.
And since he is relatively new to being a regular listener, there are times where you have done stunts to wipe steaks off, like you ate a full bag of crystals once, right?
Right, after eating a
after
steak.
After actually eating a steak. Yes.
What is something you did not realize the opposite sex did until you lived with them?
That's a loaded question right here.
It really is. And my problem is...
Lance, go first.
I don't know if I want to answer this.
We have to have honesty.
It doesn't have to be person specific. It just has to be something, a female, something you didn't know they did.
Why don't we
hair
answer for
everywhere.
Why don't we answer for each other?
No.
Yeah. One of those little bobby pins.
I didn't know. This is going to be not as salacious as some might answer. I just don't guess I realized the going to bed process took as long as the going to bed process.
Get that lotion going.
Yeah, and wash the face and all that. I mean, I am literally a brush the teeth, use the toilet, and go to bed guy. I mean, my going to bed process is maybe 30
seconds. Wherever you fall.
Maybe 30 seconds.
See, Rockstar, you've lived with multiple girls, right?
Yes.
Were they opposites, though?
Yes. Some were very neat, and some were very slobs.
Yeah,
like some people, like when you see their apartment, like, wow, there she's really clean. Then when she lives, she's like, oh, my God, everywhere.
See, I've kind of gone through the complete opposites, and I don't really know how to figure this thing out.
Dunaway?
Fifth? You complete the fifth?
Yeah.
I'm blown away. I'll say this, though. I'm blown away with how long it takes some girls to get ready.
Yeah.
And you really don't realize that until you actually are behind closed doors with them.
Well, you didn't see the whole process just when you were dating. You were there to pick them up on time.
Yeah, it blows me away. And then on the other front, there are some girls that can get ready in 30 to 45 minutes.
I will tell you that I'm not sure my wife knows where the off switch is on the light to our closet.
We leave ours
she
on
does
all
now.
The, yeah. She'll find it today. We leave ours on all the time.
The closet light?
Yeah.
I used to leave lights on all the time. That was pre-divorce.
Well, our closet light is, I mean, it's just a good kind of night light, right? It's off the bathroom, and it just kind of gives you a little light if you
do
have
you
to
you leave your AC on all day?
Oh, heck yeah.
If I had a motion detector light, that'd be a good place to put it, would be the closet.
Yeah, maybe so.
Or leaving the TV on a loud volume to fall asleep to.
Yeah, I don't like that.
That's the most annoying thing to
wake up. Is Jennifer real neat?
Yeah, Jennifer's very neat. Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah.
Second down.
What one topic instantly gets you started on an old man rant?
It's traffic for me.
Yeah,
it's
me
all
too.
Kind of traffic violations, whether you're in the left lane and you're driving slow, or if you are, I'll give you an example. I'm not going to bring up cyclists on this show because I made a mistake of doing that one time.
Let's keep away from that.
Yeah. But cyclists are supposed to obey by the same laws that drivers,
correct.
Right?
Yeah, if they're on the road, yeah.
So there's this guy in front of me yesterday, and we're driving down Hollywood Boulevard, right there about to hit Mexico Lindo. And he is not stopping at stop signs. But although he's making me go slower than I want to go.
Yeah.
So every stop sign that he misses, I honk and he puts up some kind of arm signal.
He's doing that, and every now and then he's like, damn it, another full strawberry.
And I was, honest to God, I was trying to cut my strawberries. Yeah. I swear to God. Picked up my bowl. So I'm trying to deal with that. But yeah, any of this traffic stuff, I go on around.
Brown, did you just say traffic too for you?
Yep, absolutely.
What doesn't get you started on an old man rant? Squatting at tables, at restaurants with lines.
Well, hey, our listeners agreed with me on that one. That's what goes unreported.
What else?
A hot house. We don't
hot houses, house. Yeah. Yeah.
No, the traffic thing. Like, Sunday I'm going to...
Slow play on the golf course.
Bad steak.
Sunday I'm going to church. I'll get to the bad steak in a moment. Next question. Sunday I'm going to church, and I'm going up the hill right there on Columbiana. And a guy's behind me in a motorcycle, okay? And I'm going at good speed. And he blows past me on the left side, dives in front of me, and then immediately bangs a right. And I'm like, why did you have to pass me to make that right turn? Now I have to hit my brakes. If I hadn't been going to church.
What would you have done, buddy?
Get off my lawn.
Nothing, really
but I was going to church.
Unfortunately, you guys hear all my old man moments, get off my lawn moments. It's when everyone starts saying, Golden State's better than the 90 Bulls and things like that. I'm like, come on, let's not live in that much in the moment.
What's that? Deontay Wilder could beat Goliath. I guarantee you. Yeah. Guarantee it.
Could beat Ali.
What in your mind is the biggest food crime?
This drives me crazy when people over salt or even salt before they try their food.
Yeah, my wife says I do that sometimes.
I don't think there's a restaurant that you can go in where it's not going to be salty enough. I don't even think the salt is needed. Like, I don't think I've put salt on food in years. Now, maybe if you're in prison.
Or butter.
Brown, what's the biggest food crime?
Using steak sauce. If your steak requires steak sauce, it was improperly cooked, and you should either grill a new steak or send it back to the kitchen. Or give up on trying to grill if you got to use steak sauce. I mean, you just gonna need a little more practice. You should never need steak sauce. The flavor of the steak should be enough, and it should be juicy enough that it's not so dry you need steak sauce.
I told you about Deion Sanders, right?
No.
When he was, that was the infamous story. One of my good friends worked for Jim Beam over in Atlanta, and one of the managers at Chops over there said Deion was in, and he ordered Heinz 57 with a steak.
Yeah.
That's an insult.
And a glass of Tang.
I was on the
road. Any Tang.
Now that's legit.
I was on the road in Cincinnati at the Precinct, a really good steak restaurant. I don't know if it's still open, but it was back in the day in an old police jailhouse. And each cell was
like a cool place.
Individual dining room. And with your own individual waiter, and the guy I took there, we were on a business trip, I took there, wanted some A1 with his steak, before I'd even tasting it.
That's an insult.
And we don't have steak sauce, sir.
Yeah, you shouldn't eat it.
Are those two still?
Bring me ketchup.
Good.
We don't have any ketchup. Jeez.
Still popular, the A1 and Heinz 57? I mean, are those still big brands?
Heinz 57 on some things is fine, not on a steak.
I'll occasionally put it on a burger.
Yeah, you don't need it on a steak.
Dip my fries in it occasionally.
Fourth down.
Let's say the pay is just the same. Would you rather be the host of Wheel of Fortune, Family Feud, or The Price is Right?
Family Feud for me.
Why? Yeah, I think you've immediately got to scratch Wheel of Fortune because it's so boring. And I think the only way you would show personality is either Price is Right or Family Feud. But I agree with Dunaway. I think I would rather go Family Feud.
I said The Price is Right because the game changes all the time.
Well, I heard an interview with Drew Carey saying that the problem with that, you have to memorize backstage. All the rules.
Yeah,
of those
games. That is tough.
And there's like thousands of them.
Yeah, but at least you're doing a different game all the time. It's not the same thing over and over.
It's just a little personality and survey says.
Yep.
I'd give up some of my salary. Have you the running back tandem duo in NFL history? Now, I've looked through a list that Bleacher Report put together back in 2011, 2012, and you get a lot of great one running back and then a guy I've never heard of.
Right.
Like, I've heard of Jim Brown. I've never heard of Bobby Mitchell.
I'm sure he was terrific. But he was playing with Jim Brown, so he's probably a little bit better because of that.
But you see what they're doing. They're doing the
The housing market is hot. There are three times more buyers than sellers. It's more important now than ever to make sure you have your financing in place before you even find the house. Get pre-approved today at thehomeloanexpert.com. The Home Loan Expert LLC.
That is three-year tandems.
Right.
And I don't think we can make this assumption based on 1 year. Kamara was great last year. Ingram had arguably his career year last year.
Yeah, his best year.
But I want to see it again this year. And it's going to be difficult because, as he points out, Ingram's going to miss the first four games.
But when you go to number two on this list, I was a kid, but Franco Harris and Rocky Blyer of the Pittsburgh Steelers, that was a pretty dynamic duo watching them play football. And it helped out when you got Bradshaw throwing to Swan and Stallworth and that great offensive line. I think every one of those offensive linemen made the Hall of Fame.
You know, it's crazy. We really never talk about Pittsburgh's offense. It all came back to that defense and how dominant they were in the 70s.
Right.
But you forget about the skill they had offensively.
Now, Brown, your perfect team of 1972 featured Larry Zonka, Mercury Morris, and Jim Kick with two eyes.
And Zonka has a mustard jacket. I mean, that guy was a terrific football player, obviously.
And I think Mercury Morris would, too, had he not...
Well, had his career not gotten interrupted.
Yeah. Gone off to prison.
And that's got a weird way of sidetracking your career. But when you look at total numbers, it's not outside the realm of possibility that in the fairly near future, Mark Ingram's got better numbers, than Larry Zonka.
But let's not forget that we are in a different era, and the numbers are going to be skewed compared to what they were back then.
And you're probably right.
Two extra games.
Yeah, because Zonka didn't play a 16-game schedule until his final year with the Dolphins. He'd already gone to the Giants and then came back to the Dolphins.
If he would have set this up by saying, I believe if Mark Ingram and Alvin Kamara have another year or two like they had last year, they're going to go down as the greatest running back duo. I could give you that. I can't do it based on 1 year. And then ultimately, this is a team that lost in the divisional round of the NFC playoffs.
These other teams are champions that we're talking about. Jim Taylor and Paul Hornung, Green Bay Packers, I didn't see them play. You didn't see them play. But we all watch enough NFL films to know they were fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, I know Hornung was widely considered to be the best all-around player and maybe in NFL history for quite a while, right?
Now, the first one on the Bleacher Report list that I truly remember, other than the Steelers, Bo Jackson and Marcus Allen were together for a brief moment, 87 to 1990, with the LA Raiders. That's a pretty strong... Allen's really, really good, and we know what Bo can do.
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt that's a great combo. Had Bo Jackson remained healthy... And,
yeah, because he would have been every bit of Marcus Allen and then some.
Oh, gosh, yeah. I mean, he would have taken Allen's job, right? Yeah.
I mean, but Allen was obviously the better NFL guy because Allen did it for years, and I think Marcus Allen was kind of an underrated guy, although he makes the Pro Bowl, or excuse me, makes the Hall of Fame.
It's hard to picture Alvin Kamara and Mark Ingram in the neighborhood of the guys we just named.
But I'll give you this. Even a healthy Bo Jackson never rushed for 1,000 yards.
Well, he missed... How many games did he miss?
Well, I mean, the year
of baseball,
his highest rush total was 950, and it was in 11 games.
Yeah.
Now, so he would have had he played 16 games. I get that.
Yeah, and I think another thing, Dunaway, Alvin Kamara's skill set is perfect for Sean Payton's offense, but this is a guy that we remember transferring from Alabama to Tennessee and really not putting up numbers at Tennessee. So it was a surprise at how well he actually performs year one in the NFL.
Some of your suggestions, E. Robinson says K-Mac, Kevin Mack, and Eric Metcalf. Keith says Barry Word and Christian Okoye. Daniel says LaDainian Tomlinson and Darren Sproles. Bobby from Homewood gives us Bo and Marcus. Kevin Mack, Ernest Biner, Ronnie Brown, Ricky Williams. They were together as well.
Yeah, see, Kevin Mack and Ernest Biner, to me, those were teams that went to back-to-back AFC championship games. I pointed them out earlier in the show. And you said they were 20-something on that list, which blows me away. Both those guys went for 1,000-plus in the same season.
27th on the list. Warwick Dunn and Mike Allstott of the Super Bowl-winning Tampa Bay Buccaneers back in that era there.
You tell me this. Who was the last teammates to rush for 1,000 yards on the same season? I think it might be Biner and Mack.
You think so? Other names that pop out, some of you are suggesting Tony Dorsett and Robert Newhouse. Together, Eric Dickerson and a guy I've never heard of in Barry Redden. You're a Rams fan. You remember him?
Vaguely. And that was early 80s.
In the beginning of, it wasn't even the beginning of fantasy football, but I played fantasy football back in the day where Fred Taylor and Maurice Jones-Drew were a pretty good combination to have bracketed together with the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Here are your last duos, if you guys are interested.
Okay, to both rush for 1,000 yards in a season.
You know, it's funny. I was going to bring these guys up, but I thought it would be laughable. The last duo to do it was Jonathan Stewart and D'Angelo Williams with the Carolina Panthers.
Well, I think they're worthy to be brought up.
That's a pretty good duo.
Been done 6 times in the history of the NFL, and one time was with a quarterback, and that was Warwick Dunn and Michael Vick with the Falcons. But before Jonathan Stewart and D'Angelo Williams with the Panthers, it was 2008, the Giants, Brandon Jacobs and Derek Ward. Don't remember that at all.
Former Auburn running back, and they're on this list way down. I think they're around 50 or 49.
Just real quick on Marcus Allen, though, because this just shows you. I mean, this is another guy with a mustard jacket, right? 16 years in the league. How many 1,000-yard rush seasons do you think Marcus Allen had in 16 years?
I'm going to say 7.
11 with L.A., 5 with Kansas City, 16 years. And in those 16, how many do you think?
I would say 10.
3. Isn't that insane?
So many
I know,
things,
but isn't that insane? Yeah. Then in 16 years, Marcus Allen only had 3,000-yard rush years.
So, Bucky, crazy or not crazy?
I don't think he's as crazy. I mean, everybody's pointing it out. When you compare Bo and Marcus the years they were together, it wasn't as productive. Now, were those guys better players? Maybe, but the production wasn't as good as what you just got from Kamara and Ingram.
Franco Harris and Blyer both did go for over 1,000 yards in 76. This is interesting. Franco Harris only averaged 3.9 yards per carry.
Different football back.
The housing market is hot. There are 3 times more buyers than sellers. It's more important now than ever to make sure you have your financing in place before you even find the house. Get pre-approved today at thehomeloanexpert.com. The Home Loan Expert, LLC.